greški. Sheriff in town. I don't want to shock you people, don't want to scare you people. We'll do that tomorrow, but tell you something. When I was growing up in this town, it was lunch with Casey. Casey Jones, the old railroad engineer with his peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And a sidekick named Roundhouse Rodney. You remember, huh? Growing up, everybody my age hung out with Casey. Each lunch hour during the school week, it was lunch with Casey. Little did I know, one day I'd be the one asking folks to let me be their Casey. Let me take over for old Casey. Let me be your lunch hour pal. That's what I'm asking today. Monday through Friday, noon to 2, you guys and me. What do you say? Huh? Could be worse. Let's start there, all right? Could be worse. You always want to start there. Remember when I was in jail in downtown St. Paul on Christmas Day back in 1981? Could be worse, I said. I'm not Sterling. I'm not really like Sterling. I'm not like Ron Rosenbaum and Mark O'Connell either, really. I'm not like Rush, who held this spot when I arrived here at KSTP about 15 years ago. I'm just Mishki, okay? That's what Noon to Two is going to be, just this Mishki guy. I don't have an agenda. I don't have a crusade. Don't really want to change the country. No desire to change your minds about anything. Don't care if you're left-wing, right-wing, Democrat, Republican. This doesn't matter to me. I just hope you're a relatively decent human being. If we're all trying to pull that off, we're probably all doing okay. I was born in downtown St. Paul. When young Johnny Kennedy was president of these United States. I grew up here, went to grade school here, high school here, college here, and then traveled all over the cotton picking place. I mean, I went to 44 states and 17 countries, and I was looking for a better place to live, and I never found one, so I came back home where I'm happiest, and I live 13 blocks away from the front door here at KSTP on University Avenue, about 13 blocks from the station. My five brothers and two sisters who grew up 3 miles from here all live in the Twin Cities as well. And my mom is living in the house I grew up in about 4 blocks from where the rookie grew up. And I'm going to be sitting here noon to 2 for as long as you people put up with it. Seriously. The Hubbards own the station, but you guys run it. So it either works or you boot me out. But that's the way it is for everybody here. That's the game. And it's a fun one to play. It's thrilling, actually. Anyway, what's this show going to be about? This Mishki broadcast, noon to 2. I've never been good at describing the show. Don't like doing it. It's just really going to have to be listened to for a couple of weeks, and you'll have to decide. You'll just have to figure out if this is going to work for you or if you got to go someplace else. No hard feelings if you don't hang out with me. We'll see what happens. I'm not sure I'd like me if I were you, but I might. I say, let me be either your favorite buddy, or if not, then your annoying cousin. your annoying cousin who you have to hang out with because he's family. I can be an idiot at times. I can be dead wrong quite often. But even if you end up deciding that I'm completely out to lunch, well, then ain't this the best time slot for me?
That's just a little sample of the kind of humor you're going to get noon to two right there. Nailed it! Topic.
Yeah, we're going to try out a topic on you folks right out of the chute here. Ready? Coming at you in 3, 2, 1. We're not talking to each other. Hey, you guys out there listening. I'm serious here. You aren't talking to each other. Were you aware of that? You're running into each other. You're commenting on the weather. But we're a week away from a big election here, and the weather shouldn't be the big topic, should it? Politics should be. And you people aren't talking to each other about politics. Politics is out as a subject of conversation. Did you know that? New York Times said so yesterday. Big Sunday paper, read the whole article. Fascinating. Is what we have, people. I don't know if this is going to ring true for you or not. According to the Times, the Sherry Langham, 37-year-old ardent Democrat, loved talking politics over the years. She would talk to her parents about politics. They were Republicans, but she found them kind of quirky and loved debating with them about politics. However, earlier this year, she found herself suddenly unable to even speak to her parents. They were enthusiastic supporters of Bush, and Bush had become the face of the enemy. Mother and daughter had been close, but suddenly they stopped talking and exchanging emails because the subject always came around to politics, and it got ugly fast. They don't talk anymore. According to the Times, with Iraq locked in seemingly endless violence, a contentious midterm election just a week away, a similar silent treatment seems to be spreading across society. Is it? Is this your experience? People who once feistily shared their convictions about politics now bite their tongues around friends and relatives who disagree. They try to avoid fights. It's just not something that comes up anymore. It's not worth it. Many metropolitan areas support a mix of both parties, with Republicans and Democrats living and working peacefully, side by side. Those people have always carpooled, had groups that they joined together, shared elevator rides, had adjoining cubicles, formed friendships through bonds that had nothing to do with politics. But as the divide grows deeper and wider, more extreme, these divisions are playing out in some odd ways out there, affecting friendships, affecting acquaintances, affecting family dynamics. People are saying they're just tired of debating the policies. They're tired of talking about the issues that have split the country. Frank Luntz, a Republican pollster, conducts focus groups nationwide. He says, in most parts of the country, it's very, very difficult to have a civilized conversation between two people who fundamentally disagree. So they're just not talking. Here's an algebra teacher in Kansas. He says, I was once amused by the liberal banter I'd hear at the school lunch table from my colleagues, and I'd counter with a Republican perspective. But I'm done. I've withdrawn. I can't do it anymore. Just let me sit here and eat my chicken tetrazzini. Bob Schwartz, Democrat in Columbus, has a similar, visceral reaction to his Republican friends. He recently quit his monthly poker game after 25 years. He got so fed up with hearing his Republican partners praise Bush at every gathering. He says it finally got to the point where it was me and another guy who were the only Democrats there, and we said, that's it. We don't want to play with you guys anymore. It's over after 25 years. The poker game. It's done. Jim Kaufman, 40, Democrat in Chicago. say he and his wife have not pursued a friendship with another couple whose three children are the same ages as theirs after seeing photographs of President Bush on the other couple's refrigerator. That's it. Chris Murphy, 32, counts himself among the few Republicans in Boston, where he works in the media relations department at Blue Cross Blue Shield. He says he's constantly amazed at people's presumption that he shares their views. People just assume you're a Democrat here. They turn and look at you and say, can you believe that nut in the White House? And Murphy has to say, you mean the one I voted for twice? He says it's no fun talking to these guys. This guy here says it's screwing up dating. It's gotten to the point where in dating services, they're checking you out politically first. In previous elections, there was more openness, says the director of the Civility Initiative at Johns Hopkins. In previous elections, there was more openness. The intensity of the feelings of displeasure with one or the other end of the political spectrum is such now that people realize there's real danger in any disclosure, any discussion. The workplace is a perilous minefield. People don't want to alienate their bosses, don't want to alienate their coworkers, so they just shut up about politics. Don't want to disclose their views, their worried about being tagged. A tag that'll stick with them long after the election. Wow. What the hell happened? Huh? You know what's amazing to me? What's amazing to me is all that we have in common. It's out the door. It's been tossed. I mean, we're all Americans. That comes with a few basic beliefs, right? Belief in equality and freedom and the rule of law and a few other things. How did we get here? If you have any religious beliefs, you probably embrace the golden rule. Seems like that would make any conversation go relatively smoothly. Huh? How can you have the golden rule as something you believe in and then not be able to talk about these things? Is this your experience? And if it is it okay? 651-646-TALK, 651-646-8255, or toll-free 877-615-1500. If you're just tuning in and wondering what on earth is going on and who on earth this is, I feel for you. I empathize. Hello, Ron.
Hey, Tommy, I think you're going to do good in this time slot.
I appreciate that.
Hey, you know, I think the reason people aren't talking about politics is because I watched a show last night on the Congress for this year.
Mm-hmm.
They virtually have done nothing. They've worked 2 days out of the week, Tuesday through Thursday. They don't talk to each other at all. They get paid $168,000 a year. They have better hospitalization than their constituents. Some of their constituents don't even have hospitalization. I think people are just fed up with politics and politicians.
But if they were fed up with politics and politicians, you'd think they'd mention to each other how fed up they are with politics and politicians. That would then be the conversation. But that would be a conversation involving politics, and politics is out.
Exactly. Nobody wants to even mention the name anymore. Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks, Ron. What is possibly true in what he was saying there is if you don't see people in Congress, if you don't see your representatives working well together, if they don't like each other very much, maybe you take your cue from them. If they're on Sunday morning shows ripping each other, then maybe they set the tone. Maybe they set the example. I enjoy talking politics, not so much on the air. But I enjoy talking politics in a bar. I said this a while back on my show. I've had this experience here in radio over the years. The most ugly conversation on the air could be taken to a saloon or a cafeteria, and it would be just fine. Something weird happens on the air, I find, with political discussions that does not exist when I'm out sitting around a table with a cup of coffee or a meal or a beer with somebody. So This actually doesn't ring true for me. I have found, for the most part, the people I talk to who think differently than I do politically are pretty respectful. And who wants the, if you like talking politics, who wants the conversation to end before it starts? And it's going to end before it starts if you're jerks to each other. So if you enjoy talking, you better be civil, or you're not going to get a conversation. And if you really love talking politics, it's probably pretty boring talking to people who think the same way you do every day. But that's the other thing. That's what's going on out there. People are talking politics only with the people who agree with them. Well, that must be interesting. That must be a killer conversation. A lot of nodding. I'll be back. AM 1500 KSTP. This is Mishki.
Now on AM 1500 KSTP.
When he walked out of the cotton field.
Mishki here, AM 1500 KSTP. If you're just tuning in, this is my slot for the time being. And when I say for the time being, I mean till you guys run me out of here. And until that happens, let's try and be buddies. I'm hoping you run me out about maybe when I'm 65. I've often thought about Studs Terkel doing radio into his 90s, and could I do that? Could I pull that off? I mean, assuming people still wanted me, would I want to do it? Yeah. Sadly, yeah. I don't golf. I might as well do radio. Talking about the New York Times story, a big feature yesterday in the Sunday New York Times, having to do with the fact that in America today, more than any other time in history, politics is out as a discussion until you find out whether the person in the room with you, in the elevator with you, at the bar with you, thinks like you do. If they don't, zip it. Because it gets ugly too fast, and it's no fun. 651-646-TALK, 651-646-8255, or 877-615-1500. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Tom. I think the problem is that the extremists seem to have pretty much divvied everybody up. On the one hand, you've got people who believe that George Bush knew about 9/11 back in January, and that he blew up the levee in New Orleans to save the rich people and murdered 30,000 black people. And on the other side, you've got people listening to Rush Limbaugh and Pat Robertson.
If you're talking about the two extremes, I still think you're talking about a minority. Someone told me, a political science prof over at the U of M told me one time, people think America's made up of Democrats and Republicans. America's made up of pragmatists. Show them something that works, they bite. For the most part, I believe that's who's out there. I think this whole thing is a gigantic myth. I really do. I think the whole thing is made up, manufactured by the media. I don't even believe it exists. I think you can go into a Texas bar and have a reasonable discussion if you're coming from Boston. And I don't believe in this. I actually don't think it's real.
I'm just like you. I like a well-reasoned debate, and I can actually take either side in a lot of cases. But
I like to take both sides.
Some people you can't have a rational discussion with.
Mm-hmm. But apparently you used to be able to, and that's the story. The story here is you used to be able to, and now you can't. And I mean even an election ago. There's something messed up with this one. Appreciate your time. Move on to Tony.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi.
When it gets around election time, I really like to have a good political discussion, you know, not about the sins of a legislator or whatnot, but, issues and problems.
Sure.
And what we might solve. And
so do you have them?
I'd like to discuss those with people if I, you know, think I have an idea, but it seems that in my bunch of friends that I hang around with, they all seem to be leaning a little bit lefty from me,
uh-huh.
And they will blurt out something about Bush, and it sort of shuts me down before I even get started.
So they just take a shot instead of making an argument.
Well, no, not so much that, but in general conversation, they'll, you know, make their daily comment about how they're upset with Republicans or Bush or something, and so we never really talk about politics because they made it clear just in passing.
Well, wait a minute. If their comment is they're upset with Bush, that's reasonable. It's as reasonable as not being upset with them. What I'm saying is, why wouldn't you then engage them?
When I tried that around the last election, it seemed that they really couldn't get past complaining about, you know, Bush and their feelings on Republicans and whatnot, and we never really talked issues. It seemed like they weren't willing to put some things aside and talk about, you know, let's talk Social Security, and no, that's a Bush idea, and we didn't really get past that fact. Mm-hmm.
And when you make your arguments, how are you received?
Well, and that's, you know, what I'm saying is I really haven't.
Okay.
I haven't really found a forum where I felt welcome to delve into the issues.
Okay, so what you're saying is you don't feel welcome to make your arguments. You don't think they're welcome, which is the point of this article. They don't want to hear it. Okay. All right, I appreciate that. Thank you. Hello, Matt.
Hey, good show.
Thanks.
Yeah, you know, I just think there's a feeling of, you know, just kind of a landmark, you know? I mean, the people, Democrats, you know, if they talk about their issues with other Republicans, there's no agreement, and there's nowhere to go. And if you talk to a Democrat and a Democrat, you know, there's two people agreeing. So I just think there's a big feeling of loss out there.
Yeah, I think maybe if we started with what we agreed on, these conversations could all go forward. I think if everybody started out saying, you know, I enjoy talking politics, before we start, let's talk about what we agree on. You'd probably have 7-8 pages there alone, and then the disagreements would be so minor. Because, again, I just don't think we're that different. I just don't think we're as different as they're saying we are. But to find that out, you have to be civil. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. I will now do something I have done for years. Go to Wildcat Fox. Did I move or didn't I move?
Deja vu.
What
this is all
the...
so very strange.
And as the deja vu continues, let's hear from the guy on the other side of the thermal pane glass producing this here program.
Well, he's on the phone right now.
Who's he?
You mean Kodiak?
Kodiak! What the?
It's like nighttime again.
And what's really weird when you come in here is the curtains are pulled and the lights are out when Bob does his show. That's really odd. So he's doing the whole nighttime thing in the sunshine. I'm not a turn all the lights off in the studio guy. I think I might be the last one here because Such brings him down. I come in when I come in at 5:30, they're down. I came in today. It's darker even than Joe has it. I'm not sure why that is. Can I get a ruling on that? What is the deal with talk radio and the lights being off? I mean, outside of mood, is there more to it than that?
I prefer to have the lights up.
Mood.
Is it mood?
I would think it would be mood.
I mean, if you watch talk radio movies, the lights are down. So maybe you think you have to do it because that's the way it is in the movies.
I think Venus Flytrap started that whole thing back in...
Now,
WKRP.
Well, it's a reasonable thing if you think about it this way. My light's up, Kodiak's, and where you are, down, makes sense because then he can see me. I'm in a lit-up room. If my lights go down, why do we even have the glass there? We're not even looking at each other. My light's down, Kodiak's up also makes sense because then he'd be right there. I could see him. He signals me. It'd be real clear. Both up sounds good. Both down. Not sure what's going on. Both down. Maybe is it wanting to be in sync with the listeners who can't see anything also? You guys aren't saying a hell of a lot. And I think that's the way this show's going to go. I think I'm going to tend to dominate the conversation for a change. How are you two? Good. Good to hear. Anything in the news, Wildcat?
There's a few things. There's another Johnny Cash book out, if that interests you. I know you're kind of a Johnny Cash fan.
Yeah, another book.
Another book, and I don't know how many this makes. Do you have some idea?
No, but at a certain point, they're milking it, and they're finding guys who knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy who knew Johnny, and I'm not sure where...
Well, in this case, the author knew Cash from the early 50s, but both the Statler brothers
Paper
and...
Paperboy or whatever.
I'm not sure. It doesn't say in Roseanne Cash contribute forwards. There are probably as many books on Johnny Cash now as there are on Princess Di.
Who's written about more than anybody else in history?
Dylan?
No, I'm talking... A single human being on planet Earth who's been written about more than anyone else in history. No, it's not Jesus.
JFK?
Hitler.
Napoleon.
Really?
More books on Napoleon than anyone else. No. Have you ever read one?
I haven't.
What are they all for? Anything else going on?
I have to find this teen bus driver. This happened in Fern Park, Florida, where a 15-year-old went to the Orlando Fairgrounds, and they were apparently having a bus auction, and he hopped on one of the buses that was up for sale, and then he just started driving along. He drove it along a public transit route. He picked up passengers. He collected fares. And one passenger thought, God, this kid looks just maybe a little too young to be driving the bus. So one of the passengers called 911, and the kid was charged with grand theft auto and driving without a license.
How old?
He was 15. Now, I know I've heard you say that when you were young, you thought it would be kind of fun. You want to be a garbage man because you like the way they'd sort of wheel those drums around. I'm guessing this kid watched way too many Honeymooners reruns or something and just wanted to drive the bus. And he did.
And I'm not sure what the trade-off is here. I'm not sure how hard they can throw a book at a 15-year-old. But if it isn't too bad, if it's just a reprimand and maybe a little probation, I think in the long term, it was worth it.
Well,
it's a fun story to take into your old age. No one got hurt. It's a silly little whimsical part of your life to always smile about.
Maybe not in his case. I think it could be a fetish because he's previously been charged for a similar bus theft.
Okay, well, yeah, then it's fetish. All right. Thanks, Wildcat.
Sure.
I'm T.D. Mischke, and it's time for another Odd Fact.
And you thought Mischke only analyzed hard news.
Pants used to be considered a bad word in England. Did you know that? Pants. I like saying it. It feels naughty.
From the inane...
Hey, a bonus odd fact. A blue whale's tongue weighs more than an elephant does.
To the sublime. He's the most diverse personality on Twin Cities Radio. Mischke.
Well, those are odd facts.
Evenings 5:30 to 7:30.
Make it a special day.
On AM 1500 KSTP.
Ladies and gentlemen, they're calling it food porn.
The news of the day.
American fast food chains just decided it seemed a little grotesque to have a couple of slabs of beef. What the hell? Add two more, put on a bunch of cheese, tons of bacon, and smother the whole damn thing in a creamy sauce. Call it a quadruple bypass special.
Delivered Mischke style.
You eat it, you die. You just die right there, but you die smiling.
Weeknights 5:30 to 7:30.
There are actually worse burgers out there. 1,420 calorie monster thick burger. You eat that and your neighbors die.
On AM 1500 KSTP. KSTP. AM 1500 KSTP.
I didn't know that you knew all along. Put me on the hot seat, put me on the spot. Tell me I'm in trouble, tell me I'm not. It feels so good I might be right where I belong.
Might be. Mischke, AM 1500 KSTP. Back to the phones. Hello, Toby.
Hey, Tom. Welcome to the new time.
Thank you.
Hey, I was just listening to some of the callers and then some of the ads you had here, and it kind of confirmed my idea that we're just way too, we give way too much clout to our feelings about this kind of stuff. Everybody talks about, well, I'm feeling this, or don't you feel this? drives me crazy because I think the feelings are so amazing, but we totally bought into the ads, and they just have discovered great ways to manipulate us that way to push us one way or the other, when I don't think people should, you know, take their feelings for what they're worth and, like, you know, 10% of their decision, and then think about the rest of it and, you know, look at numbers and look at, you know, something that actually is tangible or measurable or something like that. It drives me crazy to hear all this feelings talk.
Your wife must find you a lot of fun in bed.
Well, I'm her feelings.
Let's keep it clinical, honey. I hear what you're saying. It would be interesting to imagine political ads where emotion was removed from it, where they were actually going for more of the Lincoln-Douglas debate angle, trying to argue their case logically. That would radically change political advertisements in America.
Would make it so much more accurate and, I think, effective for us. But then I think the truth might happen to get out, or the reality of things might happen to get out, and then that wouldn't be very good for securing their positions in their Congress seats. So.
Yeah, I say give me a good political argument, reasonable and rational, and just add a little bit of passion so that I'm having fun talking to you. I don't want it to be too far removed from emotion that I actually hear no passion in your voice. But thank you for that. That's a good point. And I go to Mike.
Hey, Tommy.
Hi.
Got a good example for you. Tell me if I'm wrong. I say there's not 10 cents worth of difference between the two parties. If one of them came up with a cure for cancer, the other one would dump all over it until it never happened. I don't care which side it was.
You're right about that. You're right about the second point. They would never give the other party credit for coming up with a cure for cancer.
They'd never let it out. I mean, it would never get off the ground. They would make it look so bad that it would never go anywhere.
Yeah.
All they're trying to do is keep their own power. They don't care about you and me.
I draw a distinction, though, between how politicians behave and how citizens behave with one another. The politicians have behaved that way for a long time. Why we're starting to behave that way with one another is what's disturbing to me. If this New York Times article is right, we're in big trouble. We can't talk to one another about the most important issues of the day. We can call our neighbor and say, I need help. I left my lights on. Can you give me a jump? But while the guy's connecting up to your battery, you better not say anything about what's going on in Washington. That sort of climate, that sort of cold climate is not a world I'm looking forward to staying in for long. I'm hoping this passes.
I got a good one for that, Tom. I do deliveries, and I meet a lot of different people. And, you know, I get on it once in a while if, you know, something is on the radio and you happen to hear it. And first thing I start out with, I tell people, I say, there isn't 10 cents worth of difference, but let me hear what your difference would be.
Well,
and people are real open that way.
That's a great way to start. You sound more interested in the other person's opinion than you sound in giving your own. That's a great way to start.
Yeah,
thanks,
try
Mike.
And tell me where I'm wrong.
Makes sense. I appreciate it. Bye-bye. Back in a bit.
1500 KSTP.
Well, I hear a trailer coming, rolling around the bend. I ain't seen the sunshine.
Bob should have used this song for that last segment of his. Following Bob Davis. Now, Paul Harvey does 15 minutes. Can we call that a show? Do I follow Paul or do I follow Bob? Is 15 minutes legitimate as a show? I left 5:30 to 7:30 because I didn't think an hour would be a legitimate radio show. And for 7 months a year, I would have been on 5:30 to 6:30 as we went to the Twins pregame show. So I didn't think an hour was a show. Are we calling Paul's 15 minutes his little show? Going to need a ruling on that. Who do you follow at KSTP? Someone's going to ask me. I need to know what to say. For now, I'm going with Bob. Although maybe when you're Paul Harvey's age, you whittle it down to a 15-minute show. Johnny was shrinking his show, Johnny Carson, at the end. It was a good long show when he started, and it was not only getting shorter each night, but it was getting to where he wasn't showing up a couple nights a week, every week. Maybe you just get older and older and shrink it and shrink it, and no, not that. And eventually you're doing a 15-minute show. I started with Vogel here a long time ago. I was 29 years old. I'm 44 now. Started with Vogel. 2 to 4. Went to 4 to 6 after Turi Ryder left her afternoon slot. Went to mornings with Pat Mylan when Vogel and I split up. When Mylan left and Jesse Ventura took over, I got my own show in the evening. I was on 9 to 11. Then it switched to 8 to 11. Then it became 8 to 10. Then I went 10 to midnight. Then last January 3rd, I went 5:30 to 7:30. And now, with the twins coming in next spring, I'm getting away again to a slot where, for the most part, during the regular season, I can do a complete show. You're wondering what the heck's going to appear at 5:30. You know the guy who has been here, filling in? He's now filling in there. Kodiak's at the board, who I remember from late nights. I don't know what year you started working with me late nights, Kodiak, but let's see, were you four producers ago. You know that? I've had seven or eight. You were four producers ago.
Four?
High Speed Chase is my producer right now. Before him was Crash. Crash. Before Crash was Boomer.
Oh, yeah.
Before Boomer was you.
That's right.
Have you been reading the Kirby Puckett series? It's intriguing, it's fascinating, it's heartbreaking, it's bittersweet. Star Tribune has been doing a wonderful series on Kirby Puckett. Front page, started yesterday. The guy who's putting that together and doing one hell of a job is going to be on with me after the top of the hour. I'm assuming that Twins fans and even non-Twins fans are riveted to that story and can't wait for the next segment to come out. I think it runs through Wednesday. I'm very curious to know what happens when you want to do a piece like this, a behind-the-scenes look at the last years of Kirby Puckett's life. Very curious to know what doors are open to you and what are closed, and how people feel about what you're doing, what you're exposing. If you haven't checked it out yet, I highly recommend it. It starts with a Sunday paper. Story today at the top of the Star Tribune. Minnesota Hero's hard fall from grace. Richard Merrihew. I'm going to have him on after the top of the hour to try and get the story behind the story of doing the story. Because anytime you do a story like this, even when it's an in-depth four-part series, there's always a lot that doesn't get told. The story of doing the story doesn't get told. I want to know that one. I have never in my life been on MySpace, and already people are sick of it. And by that I mean people are leaving MySpace. They're pulling their pages off MySpace because it's old now. It's gotten so popular that it's passé. It's already passé. I was going to check it out sometime this year. No. It's over. That is all too typical in my mind of life in this century. Something comes along, I say to myself, "Yeah, I got to get around to checking that out." By the time I do, it's gone. I guarantee you, by the time I get my first cell phone, no, I don't own one. Don't like cell phones. I like phone booths a lot. I love pulling over and going inside them. I guarantee you, by the time I purchase my first cell phone, it'll be in an antique store. Beautiful little antique cell phone. Blackberries. All of it. By the time I get around to it, it's going to be gone. Story here, Reuters News Service. there is a growing fringe of internet users now renouncing MySpace and other networking sites, not in spite of their popularity, but because of it. It highlights a dilemma facing MySpace. While it takes a critical mass of users to make the sites work, having too many users alienates people. Especially when it then attracts an ever-growing cacophony of advertising and spam. So people are bolting on it already. Everybody's using it. It's too crowded, too many advertisements. It's become too big. Next! Entertain me with the next thing. That's why I'm a big fan of Halloween. It's always there. It's not a new thing. It's been around forever, and it always will be. Halloween's never going to get passé. I'm looking so forward to tomorrow. Mishki, after the game, the Kirby Puckett we never knew. A series running in the Star Tribune. A Minnesota hero's hard fall from grace. Dick Merrihew, the reporter on this one, is going to be on after the top of the hour. Series started Sunday. Catch it if you can. KSTP, good old St. Paul, big time Minneapolis. Stick around.
60 right now at the talk station as we get back to more Mishki.
Now, broadcasting from the inner city tarmac of University Avenue, it's Mishki.
Just after one, and you didn't screw up when you were setting your clocks. It's all right. Everything's going to be fine. It's going to work out just swell. Give me some time. It's going to be okay. We'll get close. I promise. This series is fascinating. Started yesterday in the Star Tribune. A Minnesota hero's hard fall from grace after the game. The Kirby Puckett we never knew. Dick Merrihew is here with me from the Star Tribune. He's doing a great job with this piece, and I welcome him now. Hi, Dick.
Hi, thank you.
You know, a lot of people know this story, or enough of it to know that there is a real bittersweet feeling in Minnesota every time you mention Kirby Puckett's name. How many people out there you think didn't want you to write this story?
Oh, I'm guessing the majority. I'm just looking at email responses to this piece. Probably two-thirds of the people who write in say they came to it sort of wary, and once they started in, they were fine. But I think that they were afraid that it was going to go over some very, familiar territory and ground and sort of rehash a lot of what we already know about Kirby. And I think there were a lot of people who just didn't want to read more.
The thing that I think should calm a lot of people down who are worried about Kirby's reputation getting all beaten up again is you have a lot of people participating who are friends of Kirby Puckett.
Well, I think when, we all knew the great accomplishments on the ball field, and we all heard from the players and the managers and the coaches during his career. And then we knew quite a bit about him back in 2001, 2002, when his private life started to fall apart. But what we didn't hear a lot of was, we didn't hear a lot from the people who sort of hung around with him, who played cards with him, who knew him behind the scenes, who maybe didn't really want to be a part of his baseball life, but wanted to go fishing and just, have fun with him. And I think through their voices, we try to bring Kirby to life in ways that are probably familiar to readers, but they just didn't see him at the lake. They didn't see him at the cabin. They didn't see him playing cards. They heard the funny stories on the ball field, but they didn't know about this life off the field and at the lake and in Arizona and in those places.
Is the peak of his existence in terms of his reputation, is it the Hall of Fame induction in 2001?
I think so. I mean, in talking to friends, it was clear that he truly loved going back to Cooperstown. I mean, that was one of the great joys in his life. And although he didn't miss the game so much, he missed the camaraderie. And when he would go back for 4 or 5 days every August, he would just take it all in, from playing golf and fishing and just hanging out with his peers, singing at the hotel lounge. I mean, it was just part of, you know, who he was as a human being and a player. It was sort of the mix of, I mean, I look at him and I say, you know, this guy had two great gifts. He was born with this great ability to play baseball, and he also was born with this terrific personality that just everybody sort of was drawn to, and those came together at Cooperstown. I mean, he was very much an entertainer in an arena that he was very comfortable being in.
You write today that the slide began 4 months after the Hall of Fame ceremony. He calls his good buddy down in Atlanta, tells him that his wife has caught him talking intimately on the phone with another woman. She files for divorce several months later. She tells cops Puck threatened to kill her when she confronted him about extramarital affairs. No charges are filed. Then things grow even uglier. A woman files for a restraining order against Tanya Puckett, Kirby's wife, then ex-wife, claiming Tanya threatened her and accused her of having an affair with Kirby. That gets dismissed. Then another woman comes forward. She claims she had an 18-year affair with Puckett. She files for an order for protection against Puck, saying he had shoved and threatened her. Judge dismisses that order. But now, as you write, a seamier side to Puckett has come to light. So, too, had word of a secret monetary settlement come to light involving a former Twins employee who had accused Puckett of sexual harassment. In October 2002, Puckett's charged with pulling a woman into a restroom at an Eden Prairie restaurant, grabbing her breast. He denied wrongdoing. He's eventually acquitted there. But the damage is done. Nationwide, his reputation is destroyed. 2 months later, he and the Twins part ways, and that was probably tougher to take for him than anything. He saw that as an extraordinary betrayal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think from talking to friends, from talking to his fiance about this point, they insist that he was very bitter, and that you know, for the Twins not to show up after everything he had done for the franchise over the years, you know, it was sort of his sense that he was innocent until proven guilty, and they had to give him the benefit of the doubt, and he felt that they had not done that.
You interview dozens of people in Minnesota and Arizona over several months for this piece, including Jody Olson, Puckett's fiancée, Minnesota Twins executives, Jerry Bell, Dave St. Peter, close friends, Daryl Hughes and Sherman Leske, several of Puckett's former teammates, including his first roommate, Ron Washington, his agent, Ron Shapiro, his neighbors, friends in Arizona. Tanya Puckett granted one interview. Puckett's siblings declined to be interviewed. Tanya Puckett granted one interview, then declined further requests. Do you think the participation here is because they think if you flesh out all the details of Kirby Puckett's life, ultimately you'll feel more positive things for this man than negative?
You know, I can't speak to what they thought. I think there was a sense that there may be a rounding out of or rounding off of Puckett. I mean, there was this incredible high during his career and then through Cooperstown. And then there was this incredible slide or crash after some of the things going on in his private life were exposed. And at the time of his death, I think a lot of the coverage reflected on both, but there was a tremendous sadness of a life lost so soon. And I think pulling back from all of that and trying to put it all in context over the period of the 10 years, I think probably softens the perspective a little bit. Again, it's a rounding off. It's not a judgment, but just showing readers kind of what happened to him. And I think the trick in the story was that if we hit it right, and I don't know, you always hope you do, but if we hit it right, that we can kind of bring him to life and show through anecdotes, you know, the personality, the fun, the good times, while also showing, you know, that there were clearly some deep character flaws here in this man. But I suspect that some of the friends came to the table and then talked because they felt like the full story may not have been told, or maybe not told in the way they thought it should be told.
I hope they're not sorry, because I'll tell you, from reading the first two installments, I like Puckett better. I was aware, obviously, of the character flaws prior to this series, but it does round him out more as a human being, and there's a real sense of feeling sorry for him that I didn't have as strongly prior to this. The story of his relationship with this guy, who is he, mayor of Dresser?
Yeah.
That's, to me, the most extraordinary part of the story so far. There are some other things that are maybe equally fascinating, but that just shocked me. And that, to me, was an insight into Puckett that nothing else had provided up until now. Will you tell people just kind of how that came about and who this guy is out in Dresser?
Well, the guy is a fellow by the name of Sherm Lesky, and he's 25 years older than Kirby. And they met back in November of 1996 when Kirby and his wife, Tanya, were about to purchase a cabin up near St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. And Sherm came out to inspect the cabin for the real estate agent that was working with Kirby. And he did not know who the client or the potential buyer was until he got there. They immediately hit it off, and at the end of that inspection, Kirby asked Sherm, do you ever fish this lake? And Sherm said, yeah. And, you know, do you want to go fishing sometime? And about a week later, these two guys went out decided, you know, do a little crappie fishing. They caught their limit, and Sherm pulled them into shore, and they cleaned the fish, and they just became fast friends. And over the course of the next 8-10 years, they were fishing buddies, and I think part of it was that perhaps Kirby saw Sherm as something of a father figure. I've asked Sherm about that, and he thinks there may be some truth in that. But clearly he was comfortable in confiding in this man. And
they don't appear to be guys who have anything in common outside of a love of fishing and a love for one another. But there is this one point in your story where Puckett is lonesome, and he doesn't want to be alone back at his cabin at night. And he has this older man come and stay with him overnight just to be company.
Yeah, this was shortly after he and Tanya separated, and he had no place to go. Went up to the cabin around Christmas of, I think, 2001. And he called Sherm up that night and said, hey, I've got no place to go. And Sherm says, come on over here. So he goes over there, and they play cards until the wee hours of the morning. But at the end of that session, he's heading back, and he's lonely, and he's blue, and he's just gone through, you know, a very difficult time in his personal life. And he's hurting, and Sherm goes back with him. And he told me several times that Kirby was always afraid of the dark. And I've heard that from other people, too, but I think it probably was more the combination of that and the fact that he was just at a real down point in his life. And, he just needed somebody to talk to at that point, and Sherm went back with him.
Richard Merrihue is my guest. We're talking about this series, which you'll find on the front page of the Star Tribune. It started yesterday. You can find the first installment online, and obviously the story today in today's paper. That's a lot of what I'm talking about right now with him. There are some pieces in that I want to still talk to you about. Can you
sure.
stick around through this break?
Oh, sure. No problem.
All right. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Then again, maybe we'll never leave.
Look, Mishki here for R.F. Moeller Jeweler. Fellas, it's time to get serious. Let me ask you something. After all I've told you about R.F. Moeller Jeweler, you're still on the fence a bit, aren't you? You're not sure which way to go. Listen, I can guarantee you R.F. Moeller has never lost a sale because of price. Now how you feeling? Yeah, they have beautiful stores, stunning stores, the most qualified staff in the jewelry business, but that translates to huge volume, incredible buying power. Remember, they're the largest seller of the Lazar diamond in the country, the most beautiful diamond out there. How did that happen? Was it coincidence? I don't think so. If you want to give your fiancé a diamond from CheapDiamonds.com, good luck with that relationship. If you want to be proud of where you bought your diamond, and more importantly, know that you got a great diamond at a great price, R.F. Moeller's the place. An unforgettable diamond from an unforgettable jeweler. R.F. Moeller Jeweler, Ford in Cleveland and St. Paul, next to Neiman Marcus in downtown Minneapolis, and their brand new store at 50th and France in Edina. R.F. Moeller Jeweler.
Now, back to Mishki on AM 1500, KSTP.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Kirby Puckett's favorite song. We're talking about the late Kirby Puckett and a Syria Tribune, which began yesterday. Front page, you'll also see an installment today and tomorrow. And is it all the way through Wednesday, Dick?
Correct, yes.
Okay. A Minnesota hero's hard fall from grace. After the game, the Kirby Puckett we never knew. I mentioned earlier you had access to all sorts of different people, friends, relatives, co-workers, gave you their time. Who didn't want to give you the time of day?
The siblings, obviously. I tried several times through different people to get through to them.
How many are there?
There are six. And that was probably the one area that I had no success at all getting in touch with any of them. I spoke, Rachel Blount, one of the other reporters, and I spoke with Tanya Puckett for several hours in a conference call, but it was clear at the end of that, a couple days later, she had indicated that she did not want to participate anymore in the series. And that was probably... I think in the 4 days over the course of the stories, my one regret was that I couldn't get Tanya or the siblings to the table to really go deep and talk at length about this man.
There's one part of his story I don't understand fully. The breakup with Tanya is not as devastating to him as his lack of contact with the kids. That seems to be what's really hurting him, according to his longtime friend Ron Washington. And yet, he leaves. He moves away, far away, Arizona. You write, by late 2003, several close friends, including a former Twins teammate, Danny Gladden, are trying to persuade Puckett to move south, to get away. They tell him to start over. He had talked about moving for years, but always said he's not going anywhere until Kirby Jr. graduates from high school.
Right.
But
right.
Then one day, he and his girlfriend, ultimately his fiancée, are watching the weather report. It's a cold morning. He turns to her and says, "That's it. That's it, babe. We're moving." Why did he move there?
You know, that's an interesting question, and everybody had a different answer. The most consistent answers would be that he was hurt very much by the Twins letting him go, and he had nothing really to keep him here. He also, I think, was at a place with his family or with Tanya and the kids where, he had distance. There was more distance between them for whatever reason. Again, I couldn't get Tanya to speak to any of that, but. Between the Twins, between the family stuff, and I think the Redstone Grill, the restaurant, the Eden Prairie restaurant incident where he was charged with sexual assault, I think he was deeply embarrassed by that. And so the combination, I think, of the bitterness, the embarrassment, his frustrations and family issues and, wanting to go to a warm weather state. I think it all just kind of came together at one point in time. There were some other things that I had heard in my reporting, some other things that may have been factors that sort of led up, that I couldn't pin down, but sort of led up to this notion of, you know what, I've got a target on my back, and I'm probably not welcome here anymore. And so it was a combination of all those things. But I don't know if it was any one thing. If I had to say two things specifically, I'd say the embarrassment over the trial and the parting with the twins. I think those were the big hurts in his life at that point.
But I don't get the sense that life gets better in Arizona.
Well, he wasn't there long. Clearly most of his friends are back here. He was fairly close with his fiancée's family. They're all back here. He goes down there by October 2004, buys the place, and actually moves in January, and is there for 5 months until he comes back to Wisconsin for the summer, the cabin, and then goes back down again almost for a full school year before he dies. But I just don't think he was there long enough to really develop a strong sense of, you know, this is home, this is where I belong.
But also there isn't a plan after the Twins thing falls apart, and I don't mean as a player, but working as a front office guy.
Sure.
There doesn't seem to be one interest that he has, one pursuit he wants to follow, other than, and this is two installments into your story.
Sure.
This is where I'm at.
Sure.
Other than having a good old time. As often as he possibly can with as many people as he possibly can.
He's clearly drifting, and I think there's no question that, it takes some time to probably rebound from what he went through in the, 2001, 2002, 2003 period. You know, there's a lot of trauma there for whatever reason. There's a sense by some people that there's a real self-destruction kind of component to it, that he's blowing through life and enjoying it as best he can. People say, and this will come out a little bit in tomorrow's installment, that, he was convinced he was not going to live past 50. He told everybody that. And there was sort of a sense that he was living life that way, that he was going to enjoy it as much as he could while he could. But you're right. I mean, he's drifting. They're clearly after the game. There's no focus there, nothing to really sort of lean on or go to. As we talk about, I think it's in today's installment, he had talked about a car wash, or owning a car wash, or running a McDonald's franchise, or something along those lines. Things that would have kept him busy and kept him in contact with the public and given him sort of a structure to his day. But you're right. Clearly, he doesn't have that.
He actually talks at one point about buying that McDonald's out on Highway 8 by his place. I have a lake cabin about a mile and a half from where his was on Deer Lake. So I know the McDonald's he's talking about. He talked about buying a McDonald's and showing up periodically to sign autographs and give out Kirby burgers.
Right.
I have to say I'm glad it didn't get to that. I don't know. I think there would have been some wonderful things he could have done with his life had
sure.
he lived. And I would hope a guy like Kirby Puckett would have been put to use in some grander fashion. And I don't know what that would have been. I at the end of this story today, I find myself wondering what he would have done if he did live to 55. What ultimately he would have said could give him the pleasure and the satisfaction that working for the Twins would have.
Well, I can tell you the Twins kept talking to him. Dave St. Peter, the Twins president, has told us, and I think it's in the final day here, but where he kept calling Kirby. I think the last time they spoke was last fall, but kept talking to Kirby about, coming back or in some capacity. And I think the sense was, even if it's in spring training, working with players, even if you don't want to spend the summer, away from the cabin, if you could have an influence on the kids that come up through the system, maybe that's the way to best use him.
Do you think the Twins are a little disingenuous when they say that what was happening to his reputation had nothing to do with it not working out for him and the Twins here?
Yeah. I think absolutely that there's a connection there between what happened and
they're trying to get a new stadium. They want everything going well and everything working on all cylinders. And
yeah, several friends said. I mean, Darrell Hughes said that in a long conversation. He said that's just big business. That's smart. They've got to distance themselves when an employee's in trouble like that. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I think from Kirby's perspective, the frustrating part was that after everything that he'd done, even if the trial had turned the other way on him, at the very least, somebody could have shown up and supported him publicly, and he just felt that they left him out there.
Yeah, at the trial, there were no Twins reps, right?
Correct. We asked that of Jerry Bell and Dave St. Peter, and Jerry said, no, that's correct. Nobody was at trial.
Looking forward to tomorrow's installment, Minnesota Heroes Hard Fall from Grace, Richard Merrihew, Star Tribune. Again, you can go online and catch up, but there are a couple more to go in the next couple of days. Thanks for your time, Dick. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And let's go to news with Wildcat Fox.
And here we are again. This seems so strange.
It does seem odd. If Kodiak would ever open those curtains, we'd realize...
You'd be blinded by the sunlight.
It's a one hell of a day out there. In fact, I will argue, and I know with global warming it's tough to argue this, but I will argue this is it. This is the last hurrah. This is the last day of... the last beautiful day of fall. Take a good look. You people are... who are new to this area, just take a good look around, and we'll see something like this again in April.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you weren't here doing the show right now, what would you be doing on this possibly last nice fall day?
Getting ready for my 5:30 show, but doing it in my backyard with the chickens.
And the squirrels.
And the squirrels.
How are the chickens and the squirrels?
Well, Ebony and Ivory live together in perfect harmony, side by side on my piano, Why Can't the Chickens and Squirrels? I say that to them every day.
So it's working out well.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, that's good.
The strangest story you stumbled upon in the news today is... Oh, I threw you a curveball. You didn't see that one coming. There were no strange stories.
Well, you know, I shared the bus driver story with you earlier, the 15-year-old.
Let me share with you...
Okay.
...the strangest story I found.
I'm on pins and needles, and it hurts, so hurry, would you please?
The headline. Oh, they, yeah, okay. They studied this. I want to use this other one all of a sudden. I don't know if I should.
Hey, it's your show.
I can do what I want?
Yes, you can.
Just want to give you this headline out.
Okay.
Just the headline, and then we're throwing this away. Just something to keep in mind as you drive around today, folks. Wildcat just from time to time mull this over. Rhode Island resident faces jail time for impersonating wife during gynecological exam.
Oh.
Okay, we're leaving that alone. You can just play with that today as you...
I wouldn't say play with it.
I mean...
No.
Think about it. Mull it over. There is a... You don't have to turn your mic off in there. Keep it on. Yeah, ambient noise.
Makes me
fine.
Want to run across the street to the clinic.
Oh, that's a real headline. I just leave the stories alone. I just like the headline. They studied whether or not it's better to run through the rain or walk through the rain if you want to stay dry. What do you think?
I think it depends upon how hard it's raining.
They studied this. Somebody has to fund that study.
I was just going to say, was there a government grant involved in this?
Caught in a downpour without an umbrella, most people pick up their pace. But an old wives' tale advises that a person who runs in the rain gets actually more wet. When someone runs more, the body is exposed to more droplets of water, they say. But several studies, I said one, there are several studies just out on this now. Put this claim to the test and find it wanting. A lot of physicists working on this all over. Sprinting gets a person less wet by walking by 10%. If you sprint, you get less wet, but only by 10%. Running might not be worth it. The reason they think people think you get less wet when you run is runners or get more wet when you run.
I'm following.
Runners tend to lean forward, shielding the front of their bodies but exposing the back. They may arrive and think they're drier because the front of them is dry, but the back is wet. Why are we talking about this? Why are we discussing this? I don't want to talk about this. I feel like a fool. Someone's tuning in right now and says, is this what he's going to do? Studies by physicists on rain and whether you should walk or run?
Next time I'll saunter.
I didn't give you any music, did I? It's okay, I got it covered here.
dear friends, you're about to receive on John Barleycorn, Nicotine and the Temptations of Eve.
What? Oh, yeah, that's me. Yeah, there it is. Oh, yeah.
No barking by the sewer sign, hot dogs, a razor bro, water dripping up the spout, but I don't care, let it all hang out. Hanging from a pine tree by my knees, sunshine through the shade, nobody knows what it's all about. It's too much, man, let it all hang out.
What the devil is he talking about? Mishki, AM 1500 KSTP, now noon to 2. You can call me Gary Eichten if you want to. Suzanne Summers is in the news. She's 60 years old, and she's an ageless wonder. She's an ageless wonder. And the reason is controversial bioidentical hormones made by compounding pharmacies. She rubs estrogen cream on one arm daily and progesterone cream on the other arm 14 days a month, then gets periodic drips of vitamin C and of a couple other antioxidant deals. And her husband, 10 years her senior, 70, and they say he looks about 50, she looks about 40. He's rubbing testosterone cream on one thigh and a steroid hormone every day on the other, and then they both inject human growth hormones into each other, and she's looking really good. She's written a book called Ageless. And she's my guest now. Suzanne? Oh, no, I didn't get her. The gals at WFMP did. Didn't they? They should. They should get her on. She doesn't want to get older, doesn't think she has to. She says, I'm 60 and feel 35 and I look 40, and I'm not going to get old. Why not? I think we should not only get old, I actually believe we should die. I'd like to talk to Suzanne Summers and just say, I think it would be good if you got old and died. Not anytime soon, but let's get to it and not run from it. What do you say? I like the system as it's set up right now, the one she's trying to buck. Here's what I like, and I'm very serious about this. First you're young, then you're old, and then you die. I like that. Animals seem okay with it. Well, what the hell is our complaint? Why do we not want to get old? I like getting old. I rather enjoy the whole process. I can't wait to get even older. Very serious here. Who wants to stay young into old age? Oh, what a mess. You'll be some sort of a freak. Suzanne Summers is trying to stay young into her old age. That messes with the circuitry. The lone young person sitting around with a bunch of old people your age, how does that feel? Is this a subtle way of trying not to die? Is that what isn't being said here? I don't have Suzanne Summers handy to ask. But I think this might be another one of those cheap death deals. But I think we're supposed to die. It's part of the big plan, to die. I can't believe that there's just this giant screw-up where we ended up all dying, all living things dying, and that wasn't supposed to be the way it was. I think it's supposed to be this way. It's part of the big plan. And it's nice because it comes at about the time you've done most everything anyway. I've talked to a lot of guys who are really old. They're ready. And it's a good deal, because you die, and everybody gets together who wouldn't get together ordinarily, and you get a little send-off. It's like a retirement party where you actually don't get to say anything. I know an old guy who walks real slow in our neighborhood and sits around a lot, and that looks good to me. Something's got to slow us down. We're all moving too quickly. Old age does it. Old age and the physical deterioration is there to slow us down so we can sit and ponder and ruminate and get lost in great thoughts and great memories. What 37-year-old is spending an hour and a half today marveling at an oak tree? There isn't one. You won't find that 37-year-old. But there's an 84-year-old doing it. I guarantee you that. Now, the 37-year-old can't take the time because it's the end of the month and he's busy moving. He's hauling boxes and loading vans. Well, the 84-year-old isn't asked to help in the moving because physically he isn't up to it anymore. And so he gets to admire the oak tree. See how it works? Someone has to admire the freaking oak tree. Or why do we have oak trees? That's why you get old. Suzanne Summers is constantly doing. She's alive and vibrant and feeling like a 35-year-old at 60, and she's writing a book about it, and she's injecting herself every day with thousands of things. What a drag. You know how old I feel? 44. You know how old I am? 44. Isn't that neat? That works out. It's perfect. You start working on that getting younger and younger thing, you work on that too hard, next thing you know, you're wearing short pants. A Chuck E. Cheese or something. Grow up out there. Buy a pipe and a rocking chair and enjoy your porch. Otherwise, why was the porch built? Talk to the neighbor kids about what it was like when you were young. How else are the neighbor kids ever going to learn what it was like? Take a walk around the block with a beautiful old cane made from a diamond willow. Nicely carved and stained, sunlight hitting it just so, neighbors admiring its beauty. Let your hair go stunningly, beautifully gray, and allow your face to become a roadmap of the long, tough decades you earned those stripes. Six five one 646 talk 651-646-8255 Mishki here, AM 1500 KSTP.
AM 1500 KSTP.
You know I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come.
I'm gonna have the top down today for that trip. But you get it up by tomorrow. Oh, Lord. What's coming our way come tomorrow? Scarier than anything. You'll see at the front door tomorrow night. Weather changes dramatically. Hello, Daniel.
Mishki.
Yeah.
Hey, I was born in 1969. That was the year that we put a man on the moon. That was the year that... Vietnam was going good. That was the year that Woodstock happened. And I enjoy it. That means I'm 37. I enjoy my oak tree. I enjoy my maple tree. I enjoy my elms out here, buddy. And, you know, I welcome you out today.
How much time have you been able to spend today enjoying the oak tree?
Today I have enjoyed a little bit of it. Actually, I'm looking at my elm right now. It's dropping the leaves down right this second. Mm-hmm. My maples are pretty much done. Yeah.
What are you doing today?
Today I'm listening to you.
Won't it be great when you get a job?
I do have.
When do you work?
I work whenever you're not on, obviously. But uh-huh. No. I work in the computer industry. I do some consulting.
You can't listen to this show and enjoy the oak tree.
You're not talking to somebody that's listening to you at nights, remember? This is a daytime people right now. I can see an oak tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, what city are you in?
I am in Crystal.
Crystal.
I'm in Crystal, Minnesota.
All right. There's a lone 37-year-old sitting around today looking at an oak tree. But for the most part, the people doing that are in their 70s and 80s.
Well, you know, bless them. Are they listening right now?
What I'm saying is, look forward to getting there when you can spend more time looking at oak trees and less time consulting. And don't try to be Superman when you get to be 70 and say, look, I can climb mountains just like those 30-year-olds. Why are you doing that? You should have done that.
When I'm 70 or 80 years old, I'll be blessed if I can go ahead and see the oak trees. I'll be blessed if I'm alive. I need to go ahead and do it today.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, sir.
Bless you again. I sent you an email earlier. Thank you again for being on today.
I appreciate it. I did receive your email. Ageless wonder. I don't ever want to be... I don't ever want to be called an ageless wonder. Here's what happens when you're an ageless wonder. You get the Dick Clark thing. Where you look real good, you look real good, you look real good. Everybody's saying, hey, America's oldest teenager. Boy, look at him. He looks great. Boy, he never ages. Boom! God lowers the boom. And then people start making fun of him. Because he went from 35 to 70 overnight. Stroke. Slurred speech. Weaker. Older looking. And that's the story. Everybody's talking about, oh, I'm going to have a dick. A nice slow process. Should be allowed to play out. Look like you're in your 40s and your 40s, like you're in your 50s and your 50s, and no one will ever have to say, my God, what's happened to you, man? No one will ever say that. Just age and die. It's okay. Okay?
Well, if you're one of the millions who own one of them gas-drinking, piston-clanking, air-polluting, smoke-belching four-wheel buggies from Detroit City, then pay attention. I'm about to sing your song, son.
Mishki, AM 1500 KSTP. Lord, Mr. Ford. You ever heard that song, Lord, Mr. Ford? Kodiak?
No, I haven't.
It's a fascinating argument the guy makes. I think it's Jerry Reed, old country tune. But I'm a big fan, too, of going back to horses. I'd like a horse. I'd like to get up in the morning and jump on a horse. He wants to go back to horses. Doesn't like what Ford did. He took his pony. I mentioned earlier in the show, not too many years ago, Rush Limbaugh held this slot. The lead-in to Joe Souchere was Rush for 3 hours. And, of course, Rush has been in the news quite a bit these days. You probably heard about it, saying that Michael J. Fox was exaggerating his symptoms and that political ad he did, his Parkinson's symptoms. Rush, apparently, today has said that another liberal, a Democrat Rush finds equally out to lunch, faked physical problems. John Kennedy, Rush said today, in the Dealey Plaza motorcade, exaggerated the physical effects of the headshot by falling over to his left as if practically waylaid by the bullets. Rush said JFK learned that little bit of acting from hanging out with Peter Lawford and those Rat Packers. You'll probably hear more about that on the evening news. Rush again claiming another lefty faked physical problems, saying JFK went a little overboard and playing it up there in Dealey Plaza. We got a story out of Miami. We all have apparently learned to stop making the bomb jokes at the airport, knowing we can get in a lot of trouble there. We haven't learned we have to also quit doing the I'm Bin Laden's brother joke. Didn't go over it any better. Guy tried to say he was Bin Laden's brother. The good one, though, the good Bin Laden, the quiet middle child guy. The guy who went into the car business instead of becoming a terrorist. Doug Bin Laden or something. He's been arrested and is not expected out of jail anytime soon. Just casually mentioned as he was getting on the plane that he's Osama Bin Laden's brother. He was joking. See ya. Joe Souchere is next. One show under my belt. KSTP, good old St. Paul. Big time Minneapolis. Glorious day out there. It all ends tonight. Talk to you tomorrow.